This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast version of Ben and Woods. Thanks for finding us wherever you are, radio.com, downloading the radio.com app, or, of course, you can listen to us on your smart speaker, and make sure you subscribe so you get our content every single day.
Absolutely. And there's lots of other podcasts from other hosts here in the building and here at 97.3. Make sure to check those out as well. But right now, back to Ben and Woods.
All right, Ben and Woods, a lot to get to here in our final hour on a Tuesday. Andrew Brandt from Monday Morning Quarterback and the host of the Business of Sports podcast going to be with us. I do want to get to that SVP, Scott Van Pelt commentary.
Yeah.
In just a second, we still have so many calls here that want to talk about LeBron James. I think sticking his foot in his mouth last night, did even worse trying to fix it afterwards with a couple of tweets.
Would you say that the phone lines are absolutely screaming right now, Ben?
I don't know that I go out to that level. Oh, screaming
phone
right, lines.
Okay. I've heard
but
it
done
before.
Still blinking. They're blinking. We got people on the line. We got David is in Chula Vista, wants to talk about it. So let's take a couple more calls here. David, good morning. Welcome to Ben and Woods.
Good morning. I'm going to go off script for 1 second. Hey, Woodsy, there is no Wally tipping you ever.
Oh, so thank you very much. I appreciate it.
AJ Casavo was really good, though.
Yeah, well, listen.
But all right. Whatever you say, David.
Not that good. Anyways, Ben, totally agree with you. I love me some First Amendment. So I think it's a little bit more fun to play what would we do if we were LBJ's public relations firm.
Yes.
And I agree with your point about they had a full week, and I just don't understand why they didn't mimic David Silver's comments. So I think, you know, I do everything you said, give full props to the First Amendment, but why not just give a little love to China and for all that they have done to support the NBA.
Now, to be fair, David Silver was a character on Beverly
That's
Hills
true.
90210.
Adam Stern and Adam Silver were two NBA commissioners,
correct.
But I think you mashed them up there.
Now, if David Silver was giving comments,
well, he'd ask what Donna had to say first.
From 90210, then we'd be in trouble. That would be Brian Austin Green.
And Tori Spelling.
And Tori Spelling.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, very good.
Long-time girlfriend.
No white guy could dance like that guy.
No, God, he was. I mean, and do you see who he married? He married Megan Fox. Good Lord, guy, out of all people.
You know, Donna was saving herself for marriage.
Yes, she
until
was.
Until she didn't.
Until
I
she
think,
didn't.
If I remember
God,
correctly,
we are way off script.
My 90210 chronology. We are so easily distracted
Yay,
by a shiny
look,
object.
A squirrel. Rest in peace. Rest in peace, Luke Perry.
All right. So it was my bad, or maybe it was Adam's bad, that we messed up on Nathan in Spring Valley's call next segment. So I definitely wanted to at least get to him here. Nathan, welcome to Ben and Woods.
Good morning, guys. My apologies. It was my fault. I actually hung up.
Oh, it was your fault.
We have Nathan in Spring Valley.
I was going to own it.
Like, yeah.
You panicked.
Anyways. Out!
LeBron James had his Muhammad Ali moment, and he let it go away. We all remember Muhammad Ali as a figure that was probably the most well-known figure at his time, sports figure. And do you think he would have kowtowed to anybody?
No.
Of course, of course not. And can you imagine if LeBron James stood up, said something of some power behind the Hong Kong people? They're not going to throw him in jail. And if they did, it would be an international incident.
100%.
Ironic is probably the American Trump administration probably had to get him out of prison, but that's another thing.
You know, I think the interesting comparison, I'm glad you brought up Muhammad Ali, Nathan, is that if I know my history, because obviously Muhammad Ali a little before my time, you know, he wasn't that marketable of a star because he was too polarizing back in that day. Now, history treats him very well and champions Muhammad Ali as one of the greats and, basically treats him as a hero for speaking up where others wouldn't, but didn't help him at the time.
It hurt him.
I mean, he missed out on a lot of opportunities, fights, chances, you know, probably endorsements that he didn't get because of his social justice and what he believed in. Now, LeBron is trying to kind of have it both ways right now. He wants to have the business success, but also wants to be, you know, first and foremost in the NBA when it comes to social justice issues. I don't know that you can always have both in this day and age or even in Muhammad Ali's day and age.
Yeah, but LeBron James is LeBron James. I mean, he's built so much equity, right?
Right.
Maybe when he started out, he couldn't do that, but now he's at a point where he's almost untouchable in a sense. What's Nike going to do, drop LeBron James? Of course not.
Yeah, of course not.
All right, Nathan, appreciate the call. I think we could probably take phone calls forever on this subject. I guarantee you the story's not going away. We're just waiting for the next clarification by LeBron, the next time he gets down in front of the media. There's going to be follow-ups and more columns like the one we read from Dan Wolkin a bit earlier. So story's definitely not going away. We're going to get to the Charger stuff. We only got a couple of minutes here before. I actually save that because I want to set up Andrew Brandt. So just bear with me here, Woods.
I'm wondering what you're doing right now.
I'm going to go to another story that caught my eye yesterday. That was before game 3 of the National League Championship Series.
Yes, this is amazing.
Mike Maddux, the pitching coach for the St. Louis Cardinals, made a little headline before the game yesterday when he showed up, and I guess word got around he had played a round of golf yesterday morning and made not one but two holes in one during his round of golf.
It's incredible.
Which is, for someone who has played golf for now 35 years,
yep,
and still has zero. And it's not like I'm a terrible golfer either.
Correct.
I'm pretty decent golfer. I have zero. He had two in one round yesterday. And he thought, hey, maybe that's a good sign, good karma, good luck. Well, that didn't play out as he hoped it would on the field as the Cardinals got their butts kicked by the Washington Nationals. Here's my take, though. Maybe you should have been spending that time getting Jack Flaherty, your pitcher, ready for the game as opposed to playing golf.
I was going to
on
make,
the morning of a playoff
but
game.
But see, I was going to make a joke. I was going to be like, hey, probably could have been better served in their study and film.
Marcelo
Ozuna makes a catch that he needed to catch. That's a different ballgame altogether.
I'm not the guy who says that athletes should be 24/7, never have a life, not get to do things outside of the game. No one can practice. No one can study all the time. But this is like the morning of
a
pivotal
game.
You're down 2-0 in the series. Don't you want every I dotted, every T crossed?
Can't you do both?
I mean, play golf that morning?
So let's say he starts at 6. Now, here's the interesting part. Think about this. If he doesn't get those two hole-in-ones yesterday, no one knows he played golf yesterday morning.
True.
It was probably the worst thing that could have happened to him because now you got people like you, and I'm sure everybody in St. Louis is making this point on Sports Talk Radio of, hey, man, is today now. But then again, Benny, maybe that's the way he clears his head. Maybe that's how he goes out and gets himself prepared for. If he goes out and plays golf from 6 to 9, who cares? If he's at the ballpark, 6 hours before game time, who are you or we to say what Mike Maddux, who's been very successful as a pitching coach, what he does with his time.
It did remind me of something that Rod Barajas said during his time as the interim manager of the Padres this last week of the season. Hey, when I was the bench coach, I just kind of showed up, a few hours before the game, yeah. And then I got to work. As the manager, I get up in the morning, and I'm already working. I'm on the phone with AJ. I am checking in with players to see how they feel. This is, as manager, it's a 24/7 job. As coach, it's like I'm working when I'm there,
and then
when I go home, I'm on my free time. It's just a paid employment that I have.
Yes. So it
made me think of that. Well, I guess Mike Maddux is of the Rod Braz. He's just a pitching coach. I'm not the manager.
Yeah.
I don't have to be as prepared as everyone else. I just think for a playoff game, it's going to be a lot of time to play golf after tonight.
Yeah. Sooner than later.
When
yeah.
Your team gets swept. Maybe the morning of the game 3 of the National League Championship Series, a round of golf is not necessarily the best way to be spending your time.
You just never know, Ben. I mean, look, when I get out of here, am I spending 18 hours a day prepping for tomorrow's show? No, I'm not. I should. I think our show would be better if I did, but I don't.
Speaking of Rod Barajas,
and my boss is in here and heard me say that. I do 16 hours of prep a day, just so you know. 16. I should do the full 18, but I do 16, as far as you know.
Speaking of Rod Barajas, I haven't heard his name a lot.
Not a bit.
I think I saw he did talk to the Padres, did get an interview at some point.
The curse.
You're not getting a lot of buzz about Rod Barajas.
The curse of the interim tag.
Now, read into this what you want, but I saw in the UT this morning that Josh Naylor is playing Dominican winter ball right now.
Hardly know her.
He is playing on Jace Tingler's team. He's the manager of one of the teams. And he happens to have Josh Naylor as one of his players. Now, that's probably just a coincidence, but the fact that he is clearly like one of the finalists here for the Padres managerial job, and they're sending one of their players to play for his team in the Dominican Winter League, seems at least a little bit significant to me.
You think Naylor has a lot of sway with the front office about, Nails, who do you like for next year? Did you see the home run pimp last night? Maybe the pimpiest home. Did you see it?
No.
It's pimp.
You are kidding me. Good job, Adam. You're joking. You haven't seen it yet?
No.
Oh, my God. He hits a homer.
Naylor.
He stands there.
Taint.
He folds his arms, drops the bat, and watches it go. He stands there for 4 seconds. The catcher behind him, you see him throw his arms out. You see his head come forward, which can only mean he's screaming, "Run!" And Naylor starts to jog down to first. I'll show
Money
it to you at the break.
Shot.
You will die.
Okay, I totally missed this
now,
last
and,
night.
And from what I understand, I mean, I tweeted it out
now, remember,
last
this
night.
Is the same league where Tatis had the walk-off to win the league last year and threw the bat, like, into orbit.
Yeah. It is. I think anything goes down there and with no fear of retribution whatsoever.
Whip it out.
It is one of the greatest pimp jobs you have ever seen in your life. And as I understand, somebody tweeted, is he playing against Tatis Jr.'s team?
Tatis Sr.'s team.
Oh, Tatis Sr.'s
team.
I think but Tatis
is managing,
playing,
yeah.
Right?
No, okay. Tatis isn't playing.
Is he not? He's not playing. Because I did
not
see,
yet.
I did see him on a beach chair enjoying a daiquiri yesterday from Instagram. So he's getting his relaxation in.
That's good.
Should he be in the batting cage doing extra work?
I don't know. How's that stress reaction going in the back?
I don't know.
I want him healthy.
I want
him really healthy in spring training.
I really need that.
I don't mind if he wants to play a little winter ball, but not a lot, and I just want to make sure he's healthy in February, March.
There is no doubt.
Especially April. All right, the reaction over the weekend after the two games in Los Angeles on Sunday in the NFL. First, you had the Rams. You know, it was about like 40,000 49ers fans at the Coliseum.
It looked a lot of red.
And then you had like 85% Steelers fans at Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson for Sunday Night Football. All of a sudden, everyone around the country seems to be noticing once again, this whole NFL and LA thing, not going the way the NFL had planned. We'll get some commentary from several sources. Deadspin sounded off on it. Scott Van Pelt on ESPN had a commentary on it. We're going to get to all of that coming up in just a moment. It's Ben and Woods. Right now, let's get a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. Here's Suda Vincent. Ben and Woods back with you here on 97.3 The Fan. I don't know what the low moment was for the Chargers this weekend. Just losing the game, the fans invading their stadium with the terrible towels, the attempt to rickroll the Pittsburgh Steelers fans and have it backfire with their own players.
Their own players had no idea what
Forrest
they were Lamp,
doing. Forrest Lamp, one of the offensive linemen, told the LA Times someone should get fired for even trying to do that.
Well, and the other thing that Forrest Lamp said was, hey, well, look, we're used to having no fans here, but this is ridiculous when they're playing the other team's theme song. God bless.
Plus, weren't they stealing the bit from the Padres?
Yes.
Who did it earlier this season? Very successfully, I might add.
It's great.
It was a really great moment when they did it to the Red Sox. And, of course, it just backfires on the Chargers completely. But maybe one of the worst moments was yesterday. Deadspin put out a piece. Just the headline was called, "Why Do the Los Angeles Chargers Even Exist?" It's just,
God,
it's gotten
man.
To that point.
It's so bad.
And this weekend, I think, kind of accentuated the struggles. I guess you figure in the third season, all right, people in San Diego are kind of going to be over it at this point. They're going to pick up a few fans in L.A., It's gone the other way. I don't see a lot of people in San Diego getting over it, and I don't see them picking up any new fans in L.A. They've got to have the same support all 3 years, which is, at their best, you know, they can fill it up with about half of their own fans, 13,000 or so. And at their worst, like on Sunday night, those fans sell those tickets to opposing fans to make a buck, and it ends up, you know, 80 to 90% of opposing fans in Carson.
This is amazing. This is amazing. I just got these numbers. Top markets for Steelers, Chargers on NBC. Number one.
Pittsburgh. No doubt.
41.9, a 61 share.
In any other opponent, the number two market would be the team they were playing on Sunday Night Football.
Interesting you mentioned that. The number two market, San Diego. 17.3 rating, a 34 share. Still a very good share.
Half at most of what they used to, would have
Correct.
Gotten had they still been in San Diego. They would have had a 30-something, you know, rating in San Diego.
So you got to think, though, L.A. is going to be in the top 10. So you got Vegas third, Milwaukee fourth, Indianapolis, Denver, Norfolk, Virginia?
Norfolk.
Cincinnati, Kansas City, Raleigh, and Columbus, Ohio in the top 10. Columbus and Raleigh actually tied for 10. L.A. nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found in the top 10, but Pittsburgh and San Diego. Now, again, a lot of it is hate watching, which is, I mean, ratings are ratings. You don't care how you get them. You don't care who your watchers are. Just like probably you don't care who's in your stadium. You know, the optics of it are bad, certainly, but as long as there are asses in the seats, they're going to make their money, or they're going to lose less money in their case. But it's still, it's a shock. It was shocking to see. It was shocking to hear it spread again so nationally with all these guys weighing in on it. It's a joke.
Before we get to Andrew Brandt to talk about this issue and other business-related issues in the NFL, I want to get to two members of the media that I respect a lot. Sam Farmer of the LA Times,
oh, yeah,
who's covered the NFL forever, and Scott Van Pelt of SportsCenter, my favorite SportsCenter anchor, and it's not even close.
First of all time?
At least currently going right
currently,
now.
Currently, yeah.
For sure. Maybe of all time at this point.
Wow.
We're getting up there. I mean, I don't know. Who would you pick?
Dan Patrick.
I like Dan.
And Dan and Keith were amazing.
I might like Scott Van Pelt better than
Kenny
Dan Patrick.
Kenny Mayne.
Funny at times,
there.
But I don't know, just hasn't had the staying power.
Stuart Scott, amazing.
Sure.
Rest in peace.
There's been a lot of great ones.
God, there's been some good ones.
Sam Farmer was quoted, said, and I think he was doing a national radio interview. He said, it's hard to envision this ending well for the Chargers in the NFL. To say things will be better in the new stadium is like saying my wife and I will stop fighting when we have kids. It's not. There's no magic solution that a new stadium is going to fix things.
Trust
for the
me,
Chargers.
Having a child cures all problems in your marriage. It's peaches and
they're going to just follow. The problems will follow the Chargers. They'll just be on a much bigger scale.
Yeah.
In a bigger stadium. And then there was Scott Van Pelt, who does his one big thing commentary each night, which is really one of the best segments in sports media. He took on the topic of the NFL in Los Angeles. Really good stuff. Wanted to play this series from ESPN.
Imagine spending $5 billion on anything. That's not something any of us will ever have to ponder, but imagine doing so, then realizing the football tenants, the main reason for getting the thing built, might not be worthy of the outlay. The Rams and Chargers both played in Los Angeles Sunday at home, in theory. They both lost. Neither game was close. Both were notable in that fans of the road teams took over the stadiums. San Francisco fans are known as the faithful, and they were very evident in the Coliseum, both in the red that filled the seats and in the cheers that filled the air. Their players and GM John Lynch took to social media to thank them for creating a home game far from their Northern California roots. It was even more noticeable for the Chargers because they play in a much more intimate venue, and it was almost entirely filled with Steeler fans in black waving terrible towels. So much so that at one point, the video board began playing Renegade by Styx, which is the unofficial anthem of the Steelers. Place goes bananas, only to get rickrolled with Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. Now, I get that in life, everything has become trying to get a social media win, but Chargers players were not happy. Melvin Gordon told the LA Times, quote, "It was crazy. Don't do that at our own stadium." In the same article, offensive lineman Forrest Lamp said, "We're used to not having any fans here. It does suck, though, when they're playing their music in the fourth quarter. We're the ones at home. I don't know who's in charge of that, but they should probably be fired. We're the ones at home." He's right. In theory, you'd have some support. But this story and this issue have been going on seemingly forever. Los Angeles went decades without an NFL team, and suddenly it's got two. And neither has much of a geographic claim to the fans there. Worse, they have even less emotional capital with people, which brings me back to the $5 billion stadium in Englewood. Who's it for? Understanding, of course, that Rams owner Stan Kroenke is developing this to be far more than just home to the Rams and the Chargers. It's going to host the Super Bowl and the College Football National Championship in its first couple years of existence, as well as the opening and closing of the Olympics in 2028. NBC had shots of it during the Chargers game, and it's going to be absolutely gorgeous, stunning architecturally. It'll hold over 70,000 football fans. Chargers currently have a venue that has exactly one-third of that capacity. And who's going to go to those Chargers games? What's the visual going to be? How does the NFL sell it or spin it? They got it worse than the Rams, but man, the Rams were in the Super Bowl last year. Look at the Coliseum. It's got to be half red. You know where the Niners head next? Washington. I know it's not 350 miles away like L.A., but you can go take that place over, too, if you want. As I made clear here last week, that bums me out. L.A. doesn't. It's simply an observation. No teams in Los Angeles, that wasn't enough. Two's clearly too many. There are NFL fans in Los Angeles, plenty of them. Most of them just root for other teams, and they're going to have a fancy new place to see them play when they come to town.
Two is too many.
In
Los Angeles.
It really is.
Am I petty that I enjoy this because I told them
at
the time, don't move to L.A.? It's going to be a mistake.
You can always be petty, Ben. I love petty. I love Petty Ben, by the way. Petty Ben is a special, special breed because I'm very petty. You are, you're a little more reserved, and I like that. But, boy, when it comes to the Chargers, holy, you're a local, man. You grew up here. Your entire life spent rooting for that team.
I just don't think they deserve to have success. They may end up, you know, with the money because they've got such a sweetheart deal in that stadium. I mean, paying a dollar rent, keeping their own revenues. They don't even have to give up that, you know, much in PSLs. If they don't sell them, it doesn't matter. So they'll end financially probably fine. But I want them to struggle for every moment up in Los Angeles because they deserve it. They deserve it. They left a good place. They left a community that loved them, chasing after a dollar. And people who do that deserve what's coming to them. And they're getting it over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
That's my thought. I'd love to hear Andrew Brand from the MMQB is going to join us next. Business of Sports Podcast. He also was tweeting about the struggles of the teams in L.A., especially the Chargers this weekend, and his thoughts maybe on LeBron and the China situation. Get to that coming up next with Ben Woods right here on 97.3 The Fan. Bottom line versus speaking out, the future of the NFL in Los Angeles. I got some big issues to talk about with Andrew Brandt on the business of sports. Going to get to that on Ben and Woods in just a second. First, let's get one more check of traffic on this Tuesday morning on 97.3 The Fan. Here's Suda Vincent.
In the downtown area is blocking the right lanes of northbound 5 south of Old Town Avenue. Further north in Mission Bay, another crash, this one involving a motorcyclist down in middle lanes, northbound 5 at Claremont Drive. You got it bumper to bumper on 5 between Chula Vista and La Jolla. Also still busy coming down the Carlsbad coastline into Cardiff. Traffic on 805 jam still from National City all the way up to University City. Sue DeVincent with Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan.
So our next guest, Woodsy, sent out this tweet that caught my eye over the weekend. Said the Chargers are playing in a soccer stadium before they are the Rams tenants in the new L.A. stadium where they're having trouble selling PSL. Seems like had they somehow worked out a deal in San Diego, it would have been much preferable to this. Sounds like something I've been saying for years.
Yep.
With that, welcome Andrew Brandt from the MMQB, Business of Sports Podcast, former Green Bay Packers executive with us here to Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan. Andrew, it's great to have you on again this morning. How you doing?
Good to be on and good to be talking about things other than the Packers hiring their own referees last night.
I was following your Twitter last night, Andrew, and I love it. Now, listen, Andrew worked for the Packers, so he has to say – I'm clearly biased against the Pack. Everybody getting mad at me right now. I'm a Packer fan, and people.
I saw Packers fans actually tweeting. Yeah, we got lucky on that
one. Yeah, we got lucky.
Yeah, we got a few
one.
Breaks on that one. Even they had to acknowledge Andrew that wasn't the most fairly officiated game last night.
Yeah, I had to too. And listen, I'm in media. I get it, and I'm supposed to be a voice above all this. But I think people have their fandoms.
That's overrated.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I was there 10 years and have a lot of friends still in the organization, and I'm not going to be kind of hiding that. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazing what Aaron Rodgers can do with really practice squad receivers, and I mean, the Lions have to feel awful.
Was that Lazard actually on the team, or did they just pull him out of the stands at some point?
Yeah, it looked like these guys playing receiver. Like, where did they get these guys? But anyway, back to your question. It is amazing to me, way before the other night, this has gone on for years, and this doesn't really add to the L.A. versus San Diego discussion, because speaking of the Packers, when we played there, I remember the first touchdown we scored, I looked around and like, where are we? I mean, there is a ton of cheering going on here. And I felt that way back 10, 15 years ago playing in San Diego, that whether we played in San Diego or Miami or Tampa or Arizona, it just felt like these were Lambeau Field. So I don't know if that's something unique. Obviously, you get a team like the Steelers, which probably falls into that Packers and Bears group where they're just people travel, and it's, you look at the calendar and you say San Diego or L.A., yeah, we're doing that one. And so that's what it was the other night. But, you know, the bigger issue that you raise is the issue that my expertise, the business of sports, and the business, there was no business deal to be made between the Spanos family and the city of San Diego. At the time, it just seemed like, okay, they're going to L.A., that's not a bad option. But as time goes on, you really wonder, could they have worked harder to make a deal?
Well, and that's the gazillion-dollar question, Andrew, because we like to sit in here, and you know, my partner is a San Diego native, lived and died with the Chargers, mostly died with the Chargers over the years. And, you know, all right, so, and I'm not even sure that you can answer this, but what are the options now? I mean, it cannot obviously continue to go this way. And I've been telling people, you know, that love to root against the Chargers. Now, you think it's bad now. Wait till next year when you're trying to fill 70,000 and not 27. And if you really want to make fun of the team, next year is going to be your year. And I understand some people they want to go check out the shiny new stadium. But I don't know. I just feel like optics-wise, how long can they let this go on in its current situation? And then also the second part of that question is, what legitimately could be done by the NFL?
Well, let's back up a little bit, because I covered these meetings so much for ESPN, and I just remember when LA got the nod, the Rams, and they're going to Inglewood, and Spanos and Davis are out in the cold. It was a clear message from the NFL to the Chargers and Raiders. Go back to your markets. Try to make a deal. And if you do, we'll throw you another $100 million. Think about that number, $100 million. If you can make a deal, we'll give you $100 million. So the league is begging those teams to stay. And yet, of course, a year later, the Chargers take the option. They had a year. And they said, no, we're out. And they become a tenant to Stan Kroenke and the Rams, kind of the stepsister of that building. Now we read reports about PSLs are really, they projected $400 million. Now they're projecting $150 million. And it looks like they're never going to get to that number for the Chargers games. It just looks like they're the redheaded stepsister in all this with the Rams. And it doesn't look good. So what are the options is a great question. I don't know. I don't know how the NFL can step in and juice the market for the Chargers. They're not a bad team, and they may, you know, have some momentum going into next year, if depending on how things break. But, yeah, there just doesn't seem to be the appetite. And maybe what's happening here is that the 25-year absence in L.A. is catching up because there's no fan bases. But, you know, I don't know if I'm anticipating the next question, which is any chance of going back to San Diego. I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that ship sailed. But if they're looking at the option in L.A. to an empty, huge, brand-new, shiny stadium, that's got to be considered.
Yeah, you know, Andrew, and we're talking to Andrew Brandt, Business of Sports. You mentioned that there was no deal to be had, and certainly there was no deal, at least the kind of deal the Spanos family wanted in San Diego. But, you know, San Diego State is about to tear down, you know, SDCCU Stadium, what used to be called the Q, and build their own much more modest stadium here for like $250-300 million, but they're doing it without local city money. And it, obviously, I just feel like the Chargers, had they been willing to accept something a little more modest as opposed to the, you know, the $1.8 billion proposal for downtown that they put in front of voters that was going to require a tax increase on tourists and all that, that there was a deal to be done. In fact, if they wanted to call San Diego State right now and say, hey, you know what, if we're willing to chip in, you know, two-thirds the cost and make this stadium a little bigger and nicer and do a billion-dollar thing down there, they might still be able to do something, at this point in San Diego. I just think there's too many hard feelings. You know, there's been too many bridges burned on both sides is the real obstacle between ever getting the Chargers back to San Diego.
Yeah, and again, going back to the meetings, it looked like for a long time this – doesn't really help talk about San Diego, but it looked like a long time that Raiders Chargers together in Carson was going to be the choice over Rams in Inglewood. And lo and behold, these meetings, Jerry Jones stands up and says, we need to think bigger, and this Inglewood will be part of this multi-billion-dollar retail project, and we'll host Super Bowls, and we'll host combines, and we'll host Olympics, and we'll host World Cup, and we'll have all kinds of events there, and think bigger, and the brand's bigger than Carson, and you know, it all just kind of shifted, and they looked at Dean Spanos and Mark Davis and patted them on the back and say, good luck next time, but go get a deal done, and of course they didn't.
I was there in Houston that day when they made that decision. I don't remember
if
you were there as well, and I still contend to this day that the biggest mistake the NFL made, you remember how they were rushing out to their limos to get the deal done and it all came together and in an hour? Had they just taken a couple of more hours and thought about the options that they were giving Dean Spanos and Mark Davis?
And the fallout.
That wasn't really that smart of the NFL to just kind of rush through that process and give them a dollar lease in Inglewood. I mean, they made it so easy for the Chargers to go to LA and take that option. No commitment on PSL sales, just whatever you got, you're going to contribute. I think they're regretting the haste of which that happened that day in Houston now. At least some of the owners probably privately are.
Yeah, I mean, it's the optics of watching that game, as I'm sure you guys did more than me, and trying to count one or two Chargers fans at a home game. The optics are bad. Now, again, they play a team that's not a Midwestern or popular East Coast team that travels well. Maybe it's different optics playing the Chargers playing at quote-unquote home. But it does bring up the specter next year of this brand-new shiny stadium. As you said, if they don't draw next year with the honeymoon of the stadium, oh, my God, you know, what's going to happen in 5 years? Because, again, this is going to be a honeymoon year, whether the Chargers or Rams are good or not. You figure, oh, everyone's going to want to see the stadium, spend it, you know, their day at the new stadium. But that's going to wear off.
And, Andrew, were you surprised at all? We are talking to Andrew Brandt, host of the Business of Sports podcast, also columnist for the Monday Morning Quarterback. Were you surprised at all by the scene in the Coliseum with, you know, 50% Niners fans at least?
Yeah, that surprised me as well. I mean, listen, we can talk about how good these teams are, but, you know, the Rams have an exciting team under anyone's opinion, whether they're winning now or not. But you figure that's a team that's going to draw, you know, in star-driven L.A. They're flashy. They have big-time offense with the exciting young coach. And that doesn't seem to be working either. But you're right. Just like Las Vegas, which we haven't talked about, there are going to be a ton of visiting team fans in these games. But that's not sustainable. I mean, I just wonder what the NFL is thinking.
Well, like, yeah, if only we had some historical basis to prove that football in L.A. isn't always what it's cracked up to be. I mean, it's, you know, you keep going back to the well, and it's like, man. Really thought it was going to happen this time, and here we are, you know, a couple of years later, and it's like they couldn't care less. They could not. I'd rather have a team in Portland, you know, because it'd be filled. I mean, look at Buffalo. Look at Green Bay. Look at all of these places where, you know, they're pilgrimages for fans. Not, hey, we'll get down there for one game. Look, I've been to L.A. enough to know I'm never leaving my house to go to a football game, ever. I don't care how much I love the team. There's just no way. It's hard enough. I went to a World Series game. It took me 5 hours to get out of the parking lot. I'm never going to a game.
This is a problem the NFL is facing in all sports leagues. And how to engage when it may be a better view on your widescreen television and you don't fight parking and traffic and drunks. So, you know, that's always going to be the question for any live sporting event right now, especially younger audiences. And whether it's, you know, in-game app betting that you can only do at the facility.
Oh, yeah.
Or some kind of esports gaming in the concourse. You're going to have to figure out ways to get young people to these games.
Andrew, before you go, maybe for the first time ever, the NFL probably happy that their product isn't as popular in China as the NBA's product because they've kind of been spared the controversy of this past week. But what would you say to someone like LeBron James, who obviously has business interests in that country and kind of stepped in it last night, seemed unprepared for the questioning that he had to know was coming. But it is that balance between a brand, a business, you know, a social impact that many of these NBA athletes are having. And it's almost no matter what you say, you're going to make someone mad at this point.
Yeah, and I have a column coming out today on Sports Illustrated, MMQB, about the NFL kind of sitting back, maybe smugly smiling at all this because NBA is known as progressive and they're known as liberal and they're known as doing all these kind of things. And here they are, the NFL is probably thinking, hey, look, they're just like us. You know, business first. When politics gets involved, it doesn't work. So we'll sit back and we'll watch the NBA just come back just like we were.
Oh, that's pretty good. I can't wait to read that, actually. That actually just made a lot of sense in my head. I can't believe I didn't put that together yet. And I was like, it's not so fun and easy, is it, right?
But I know, listen, I am not the last person to criticize LeBron. I think he's been wonderful for sports in general. He's a role model. There's never been anything negative about his life off the court. He's put a school together. He raises his kids well, same woman. I mean, this is a guy that you have to look up to, but you're right. This was awkward all around. And the way they're dragging Daryl Morey under the bus is amazing to me. And this is one of the most respected general managers in the league. No one's come to his defense. In a world where coaches and players routinely criticize issues in civil rights and human rights, and that's exactly what this guy was advocating for in a tweet, but it was bigger than that. It was international business, and it affected these guys on the trip. So NBAs can't get out of China soon enough right now.
Andrew, that was amazing. Love it when you come on the show. Thank you for giving us some time this morning. We're looking forward to that column as well.
Really appreciate it.
Oh, it was a pleasure, guys.
Andrew Brandt, Business of Sports, Sports Illustrated's MMQB.
Now, the in-game gambling, you could only do it in the stadium. You're like, all right. How about Maggie tweets in, Ben, what about Baccarat in the concourse?
Baccarat.
The concourse. Would that get you to an NFL game?
Yeah, I think I could go for a little Baccarat in the concourse.
But your first choice, obviously, is to play Baccarat at 7 Mile
SD Casino. Mike tweeted me earlier. He said, I may be the only one in the world that feels this way, but I hate the way Ben Higgins says Baccarat.
Oh, boy.
It's like listening to Alex Trebek do foreign accents and smugly making sure he's doing it as perfect as he can to show off he knows the pronunciation. Okay, first of all.
Oh, God.
Yes, that's true.
It is.
Second of all, it is pronounced Baccarat. That's the way the word is pronounced.
We had a whole thing on it. I had to eat a lot of crow because I thought it was Baccarat or Baccarat, and it's not. It's Baccarat. He's right, Mike. We're wrong. Yes, he's fancy.
I'm not going to mispronounce something just to sound more like a man of the people. That's not who I am.
That's what I do.
I get that a lot, by the way. In television, they always say, don't use a $10 word when a 2-cent word will do. But I like using big words. That's who I
know.
Am.
We
That's
know.
Me. I like using big words, like denouement.
What's the one you said today?
Denouement.
Denouement. I'd never heard of that word in my life.
Adam, have you ever heard? Anodyne was one that we learned today.
You said anodyne?
Taint.
Taint is a good one.
It's not, no.
Now, Ben, don't say Danimo when you can say taint.
Taint.
Same thing.
It's not the same thing.
Oh. Crap.
It's not even close to the same thing.
I wish it was. I wish it was.
Getting some tweets.
Bush.
Yeah. Use those two.
Way back in
words.
Our first hour, I sent out a tweet asking, after all those Bryce Harper jerseys were out of the Nationals game, you know, being modified and changed, what jersey did you purchase that you, like, almost immediately regretted because the player was traded or did something dumb or was just bad?
Hunter Renfrow is a loser.
I don't have a Hunter Renfrow jersey.
No, you don't have any
jerseys. I definitely don't. Got a lot of David Boston Chargers jerseys.
Yeah, that's a big
being
one.
Response. I am Drake says Will Myers doesn't not too happy about having a Will Myers jersey right now.
Well, I mean, listen, they made the guy the face of the franchise, and it hasn't worked out as of yet. And I can understand why you would buy that jersey. That one to me is not. I saw a lot of people saying they bought Jason Bartlett jerseys.
I saw that too. Like, why did people bring Jason Bartlett?
Now, can I say this?
Craig Kimbrell, he's a short timer in San Diego.
I do remember Bartlett got here in what, 2010? It was my first year in town, and I was the quote unquote sports guy on the Mikey show. And I remember the host asked me, so Woodsy, what do you know about this Jason Bartlett? And I'm like, actually, the guy's a pretty good player. Something to be excited about. I wonder if I'm responsible for somebody going out and buying a Jason Bartlett jersey.
F you!
Might. Jason Bartlett. Kelly we got said, excited about him.
Kelly said she bought a Mark Sanchez Jets jersey.
Oh, man.
Travis has a Rick Meyer jersey floating
Meyer.
Around somewhere.
I made out with his sister. True story.
Let's see. John has a Toby Gerhart Jacksonville jersey.
Yeeks. Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there's some Chad Qualls. Tyler, why did you buy a Chad Qualls jersey or an Edward Mujica?
That's amazing. That's like you're doing
middle reliever jerseys.
You're doing a bit. What about a Wingener jersey? Would you buy one of those?
Steve said he bought a Jay Cutler jersey once. Had to put a B over the C so it became Kevin Butler, kicker, instead of Jay Cutler.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, Antonio Cromartie. Yeah, why do you keep getting these Jason Bartlett jerseys?
There's so many people that bought Jason Bartlett jerseys. It makes no sense to me. All right.
Good show today.
Great show.
Even without
great job, Adam.
Our beloved Paul, who's going under the knife in just a couple of hours, but swears he's going to be back later this week. Adam, our boss, had to come in and run the board middle of the morning. Great job, Adam.
Great job.
Even throwing in my drops by the end of the show, feeling comfortable with what he was doing.
So, blame it on the Henry.
I appreciate the teamwork here at 97.3 The Fan. Everybody is willing to pitch in. Great job by Hammer, our assistant producer, who, by the way, got the invite from Shelley for the Down at Our Rendezvous podcast later today.
Oh, my God. I cannot wait to hear it.
He's heading up to the Regal Seagull. Shelly's looking forward to that.
I bet she is.
That is it for us. Jim Rome Show is coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 5 a.m. for Woodsy. I'm Ben. Thanks for joining us. Ben and Woods right here on 97.3 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.